Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Chris and Dominic's talking contest. I am going to win it this week. There's no doubt because I
think you win it every week, honestly, but
you know what? This week I'm going to use a lot of words to speak about someone named Britney Spears, who I am furious with.
We're starting with Britney Watch. Is that what you're telling
me? Let's do it. Sorry. Fuck. Do it.
Britney Watch.
Oh, baby. Hey, y'all.
The number of people that truly come up to me on a day-to-day basis as I am at work and go, hey, y'all, like, truly, Dominic, I wish I was joking.
I might be going from hey, y'all to bye, bitch with this one.
Wait,
so,
why?
You know, Christopher, so she apparently... apologizes for statements made in her book about Justin Timberlake. She apologizes for revealing or making or whatever. It's like, you know what, girl? You take us on a journey for 3 years, right? We were all rooting for you. You turn even those of us who thought, still think, you're a lunatic. We were on your side. And now we buy the book, we buy your bullshit. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, haha, just kidding. I apologize for this. I'm letting him off. You can't let him off the hook. It's over.
I know, but that's not what she said. She was like, I didn't want to hurt people with the things that I said in my book.
It's, I'm sorry that's, she's waving a white flag there. That is absolute bullshit.
I think what but here's what I am saying to you. I am saying is I think that she posted that to be like, I don't want people to be mean to him on purpose. Like, she was posting that for the army, aka me, to like put the guns down and like not attack him for all this.
Well,
speaking
she
of bullshit,
should have told us that. She should have told us that before we all went online and purchased or streamed her horrible song called Selfish song. Just to play a joke on Justin Timberlake.
I mean,
how dare you?
But just as bad as his song Selfish. That song is terrible.
Well,
did you see his SNL performance?
I can't. First of all,
Dominic,
this man, by the way, I have masturbated to this man in the past. And now when he does choreo, it is like watching Bill Cosby dance. It's unbelievable the way he moves. Put him away. Get rid of him. It's done. I thought Britney killed him already.
And the
what is
and
happening
the song,
here?
The first song he did was the worst song I've ever heard in my life. One of the listeners who is my coworker was like, a song with no melody and no chorus? Weird. And it truly was that first song that was not the one, not Selfish, the other one. When I tell you it was straight up just a bunch of words put together into a beat, it was...
I actually love that, by the way. A song with no melody and no chorus. That is hilarious. Yeah. One of my standbys is always if someone's bad at a piano bar, I'm like, do you understand you were somehow sharp and flat at the same time? That's in that bucket of jokes. Yeah, I love that.
Love it.
Yeah, cringed every moment he was on camera during that SNL. Terrible. His moment is done. It's done.
And this is, okay, put on your tinfoil hat for 2 seconds with me. In my world, I'm thinking she sees that like everyone is going after him and she feels bad. And she's like, I don't actually, like she needed to tell her story, but she's like, I don't want the world to now hate him for this. Like, but I had to tell this. Like she still needed to tell this story. And so I think that is her way of trying to be like, guys, like stop. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like put the pitchforks down. Like we've already waked him off the face of the planet and he's embarrassing himself enough. Like
she's too late.
Yeah. Well, she's too late. Well,
you know what, Brittany, if you want to reverse course here, I think that's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to process, own, or compartmentalize your own victimhood. What I'm telling you is that I will not reverse course on these issues.
Oh, brother. Oh, God.
I started a year ago. I didn't care about her. I love Justin. This podcast turns me into part of the Brittany army. I'm doing daily updates on her to serve pop culture and the listeners. And she turns around and she's like, well, about that Justin stuff. Don't worry about it. No,
I know,
girl.
But she didn't say like, I didn't mean to be mean or something. She was just like, don't be mean to him. Like, let him live, basically.
You are an apologist.
I am an apologist. Yeah, plus, she's not what Dominic.
She's not,
like, she's not well. Not like, well. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. Like, you're acting. No, she's not. This is the blind leading the blind. And so, honestly, like, it's, you know. For her, I actually thought it was great. like, the bar is on the floor there, below sea level, as I like to say.
My jaw was on the floor when the text about this came to the group chat. I was like, you fucking kidding me.
Now, speaking of jaw on the floor, the fact that he did not go up on that stage at SNL and say, faux shiz, that is, if he did that, we would be like, you know what?
That would have been a genius move.
It would have been so good. Or if he would have put
he doesn't actually make fun of himself. That's
which is half the problem.
Right. He pretends he does. And then when Jimmy Fallon walked out there with him, I was
good.
Honestly.
Bye. Yeah. No.
Stop it. SNL 50 years, then be done. If this is what we're doing is stunts now. No. Over. Kill it.
Yeah.
Bury it.
It was wow. You know that like every second someone's like, fix Justin Timberlake again. Like they're like, they want the 2.0. They want the 2.0 fix.
All right, let's move on. Speaking of something that needs to be fixed, this has been a long simmering feud between Nicki Minaj and Megan Thee Stallion, but it is now the feud. It is the feud of the moment and it has bubbled over. And Nicki does not look good at this point. She has gone too far. TF, as the kids say.
So, TF. No, they don't.
Yes, they do. My children say that.
Oh, sure. Who, me? Know that when Hassan walked out the door, he was in the middle of saying that him and obviously friend of the pod, Leanna Inzerillo, have been sending each other 6 minute long voice memos discussing this feud. So I think they both need to come on together to fix Nicki Minaj with us. Just saying.
I mean, I had to, you know, it's been all over the webs. And so I did a little research today to figure out like how this all happened. And you forget Megan Thee Stallion's not been around that long, but I guess there was an Instagram Live, I guess, in 2019 that cemented her career in Instagram. But she joined Nicki Minaj's Instagram Live. I didn't realize that Nicki had played like a role in Megan popping off, as it were. And then that begat Hot Girl Summer. And then the following year, Megan did WAP with Cardi B and all hell started to just break loose because Nicki and Cardi are enemies.
Well,
who've had physical altercations.
Yeah. Yes.
At the Met Gala, remember?
Well, no. Jesus. I mean, like, what's the common denominator of all of these things? It's Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Excuse me.
And let me just go on the record saying I am scared of the Barbs. And so
we should be.
I'm treading very lightly with what I'm saying. And also, Nicki's going into, like, fan comments and like attacking them, so like she could absolutely come for us like in any way possible. So I know that I am peeing my pants of fear as we speak about
it. I mean, maybe the whole thing is a stunt. It just doesn't feel like it though, because this stuff is very guttural.
I think she likes to get in fights, and not in a fun like publicity way, in like a mean way.
I don't know. Well, Megan should know that, because didn't Megan released her song called Hiss, and in it, and she very surreptitiously comes for Nicki by saying Megan versus Megan's Law, because Nicki's husband is a sex offender.
That's a stretch to me.
Really?
Yes.
Your opinion differs with that of
everyone on the internet.
The people who read the lyrics. Yes.
Yeah. I think that they, I don't know. I think it's a stretch, whatever, even if it is, who cares? But like, I mean, it's wild. This is like back. This is like Tupac and like Biggie shit. Like they are.
Right. I mean, you want to say like
blaze.
Well, you don't want anyone to get shot, but someone already has.
I mean,
Megan Thee Stallion's been shot in the foot.
Yes.
Which is referenced in Nicki's response song called Bigfoot. And she just goes in and starts saying shit about. She's been saying shit about Megan's recently deceased mother, which is where I think the feud has gone bonkers.
Up.
And now there is added security at the graveyard that houses Megan Thee Stallion's mother because of threats from
the Barbs.
Nicki Minaj supporters. Yes, the Barbs.
I must go on the record to just say that, like, if I have to sum this up in like one sentence, Nicki Minaj ran the pop and rap game for like the last decade, and now no one cares about her, and she's doing everything she can to claw her way back into the fame that she used to have, and this is it, and it's not
working. You know, I'm not gonna argue with you. It's funny because a lot of people have been asking us to fix Nicki recently. No one has asked us to fix Megan. Maybe we need to take a long hard look at Miss Nicole Minaj Atoua, which is her full name, I believe, from where she's from.
Onika Miraj is her real name. I know that.
Oh, work.
Period. I don't know her middle name, though, so we'll see.
Maybe
we need to do like a big fix both of them at the same time.
I don't know that Megan needs to be fixed, but we can argue about it.
We can decide on that episode. We can discuss. All right,
Move on to the queen of the world, Miss Taylor Louise Swift. This one, I mean, since we have last been here, there's three stories every day about her. It's insane. The entire world is run by Donald Trump and Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
It's pretty insane. We want to issue a retraction, because last week on this broadcast, I mistakenly said that Taylor Swift was on her way to the Super Bowl, not realizing that one more game had to be won before that would be official. One more game has been won, which it means it now is official that she'll be going to the Super Bowl. And for all of the homophobic people who DM and texted me last week for not knowing this information, I don't care. I don't care if anything that we say here is factually
correct.
We
do so much for you.
Who gave you my number?
We do so much for you. I'm getting sick of it.
I want to be correct.
I'm getting sick of it. Like, the one thing that it's like, oh, this? I'm like, I haven't slept because I've stayed up all night editing these episodes, and that's what you're going to say to me, not, this was funny.
In other Taylor Swift news, I mean, this story is already, it's 3 days old, so, or 4 days old, and it feels like an eternity. But naked pictures that happened in between our broadcasts, I feel like they've all come and gone. I did not look at any of them. Did you?
Well, I only know that people told me that this happened. I've been shooting a television show, so I truly have not been like on Instagram all day. So I'm not picking up all.
I feel like that was directed at me,
which
I find incredibly rude. I'm prepared to have a Nicki Megan style feud with you.
That's what this, we do that every week, Dominic. I don't know what's changing.
This is an entire dual diss track. Yeah, that is what this podcast is.
Is it not? I mean, it should be if it's not, because I think that's fun. That I know you do too.
You didn't look at the pictures. All right, because you were working and I don't know what I was doing. Go ahead.
I didn't look at the pictures, but it's, someone said to me, they said it's, we were saying her power, she's just so powerful. And someone, oh, you know who it was? Isaac Butler from our Abby Lee Miller episode.
I love him. Emmy nominee Isaac Butler, excuse me, GLAAD Award nominee Isaac Butler. Right.
He was like, the thing that's funny is like these AI photos of celebrities have been such a problem for like a couple months now. And like no one has taken any steps to correct
right,
it.
But once it's Taylor,
and now it's Taylor and she's like, I don't like this. And now like governments are like scuttling together to like make restrictions, which is like her power truly does know no bounds.
I think that's the first time I've said twat on this podcast, by the way.
Sure. This year. Yeah.
I don't know that I use the T word very often.
I don't either. It's such a
very guttural. I feel like the T word. To me, that word is actually filthier than the C word.
Well, clit is like our brand of our entire lives.
That's not
now,
the C word. That's a capital C word.
No, I mean saying that. Why would you say twat when you could just say like anything that has to do with the vagina? We make it clit as something, so it's like.
If I use the dirtier C word, that to me is not even, I don't even know that I use that as an insult anymore, which is how it was born. I would use the word twat. Now, if I call you a twat, that means it's true disrespect. If I call you a cunt, it means I think you wear a crown, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Well, charisma, unique. What is it? Charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Yeah.
That's right. But Taylor Swift, speaking of cunt, in the cuntest move of the year, Taylor Swift is going to the Super Bowl because she's fucking someone who's going to be in it. I mean, come on.
I love it.
It's a fairy tale romance. It's utterly ridiculous.
It really is. It really is a fairy tale romance.
It's utterly ridiculous. She's going to perform in Japan and then get on an environment destroying private plane powered by corpses and things in museums, and she's going to go to the Super Bowl and make out with her man. People are coming at her left and right.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson has threatened suicide if the Chiefs shut up. Super Bowl something ridiculous. He's tweeting like people are losing their minds.
And also it's like apparently all the men are like mad because all they're doing is just doing shots of Taylor Swift, right? And now all the guys are pissed. Because they're like, we want to talk about the game, not like celebrity who's there, right? But guess what? That goes to show you the NFL doesn't give a fuck what you care about. They want women's eyeballs on that screen. That's what they want. So
can I tell you though, I'm scared for Travis Kelce when this breakup comes.
Oh, he's done for. They have to get married. She knows.
They're going to get married.
She's I'm holding a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
Like if they, yeah. No,
they're definitely going to get married because she's been seen or heard on mic calling Travis Kelce's dad, calling him dad on, you know, like familiarly, like you would call it an in-law. Yeah.
Oh Lord.
And I think
I don't know if we would make
cheat. He's going to cheat and then he's going to die.
I don't even think it's that. I don't know if any Swifties will be left when she gets married and walks. Like if the first photos of her wedding dress, like the internet will truly just shut down from traffic. Like
maybe
think about her in a wedding dress on people.com's Instagram. Like my phone would catch on fire. Do you know what I mean? Like it's the whatever bandwidth we have as a society is not ready for Taylor Swift in a wedding dress. Am I right or am I right?
I think you're right. I'm just, you know, I would definitely want to produce the show about that wedding though. Can you imagine?
Oh, she'll never.
But wouldn't it be wonderful?
It would be amazing, but she would never do that and she shouldn't do it. It would be beautiful, though.
You know, I think I've done it all anyway. I produced the first season of Don't Be Tardy, and I walked down the aisle right in front of Kim Zolciak. So I've already done this. I've already gone to a royal wedding. Thank you very much.
You really have.
Taylor Swift.
And I was at Teresa's wedding, so there you go.
Oh, that's right. You were. Teresa Giudice. Yes.
Correct.
All right. Speaking of pretension, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you what, even though it's the fourth thing we're talking about, it is probably the story of the week. And that is Anne Hathaway being caught on camera.
Dominic,
I'm just looking at Chris's face. We have to start doing video on this podcast soon because I need people to know I'm not wasted. Like when I just bust out laughing like Dudley Moore and Arthur, it's because I'm looking at your face and you just hear the words Anne Hathaway and you look like a cartoon.
Like I
it's
did like the Grinch smile. You know when the Grinch gets,
yes,
when the Grinch gets excited and he's like ready to do evil. That's like what
you
I did.
Just,
okay,
you did.
Now, I have to tell you, I'm on her side. I know you're about to flip out.
I'm not.
I'm on her side.
There's nothing wrong with what she did. It's just the way
she's such. Everyone hates her.
And for those of you who don't
hate her,
I know. I'm sure there are definitely people listening who may not know what we're talking about.
She gets out of a car.
That didn't make sense. I said definitely may not. That's not even a thing. Some of them, fuck it. Anne Hathaway is in Italy and she's being swarmed by photographers and onlookers. And she held up her hands and told them to be calm, except she's Anne Hathaway. So she held up her hands and said, calma, calma. And it's a meme and it's worthy of it because she looks like Anne Hathaway saying calma. And that is
it's so funny. It's good.
Beyond.
Everyone hates her. I feel bad for her. I put her back on the list after this because we need to fix her because everyone fucking hates her. And I love her. I really
I know.
Even if she's pretentious, I don't care. I really love her. And like everyone hates her.
I know it's still winter, but Kalma is already this year's I Wish You Well, just so you know. Like the next time Chris acts up on this podcast, I'm going to just say, Kalma.
Kalma. It's so, that should be a ringtone. Kalma. That should be a ringtone we do. Kalma.
Kalma. What were the basically famous people ringtones are? Hey, y'all. Kalma. And hello, I'm Lenny.
No, and kill him.
Kill him.
We haven't broke that one out in a while. No, but she basically is like telling all these people like calm down, like, and she goes, I will come to you and then we will do a picture together, which I'm not gonna lie to you, like, and I can't believe that I'm about to liken Anne Hathaway in Italy to me in BravoCon in Las Vegas, but like when people are like ready to take a picture with a famous person, it is scary. Like, they were probably, like, all like, and not for nothing. No one wants to talk to anyone anymore. Like, when I tell you every person at BravoCon was like, no one even cared what I had to say. All they wanted was a photo. Like,
yeah,
these people don't give a fuck to be like, hi, Anne Hathaway. Like, how are you? They want to do a selfie, take it, and be gone, baby, gone. So she was like, I know what you want. Everyone just stand in a line, and we'll do this in an orderly fashion, which I respect.
Kalma.
Did she look like an alien whenever she was doing it? Yes.
Does she look like one from the moment she wakes up until she goes to sleep? Also, yes.
And that's why I like her. It is good. I mean, it's a meme factory.
I have something else to tell you about a celebrity we have fixed. Candace Cameron Bure, known, of course, to this planet and podcast as CCB.
Yeah.
Just to make our listeners feel old, her son got married. She has a son with Marion age. She's a 23-year-old son. She attended his wedding this weekend. And I only bring it up because her son's name is Lev, which means his name is Lev Bure. And the moment I heard someone's name is Lev Bure, I just thought, that sounds like a pharmaceutical that you would see advertised during an SVU marathon on the USA Network. For years, I couldn't go out in the sun. And then I used Lev Bure.
You can't.
Did I keep saying brulee? Like creme brulee?
Creme brulee.
Lev Bure. Oh, I had a rash all over my nethers. And then I used Lev Bure.
My nethers.
Do not use Lev Bure if you are the member of any race.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, that CCB.
What's she up to?
How was her? Does she have like an update of like how Christmas was? You know what I mean? I want to know how the holiday season was for Gak.
Well, all I know is they are very Christian. So if she is a child that's married, she's going to be a grandmother by Christmas.
Oh, it's probably a shotgun wedding, honestly.
I don't know.
Because they're like, we had to breed now.
They're very blonde. He looks very gay. People who are very Christian, no matter their gender, just look like gay men to me.
Yeah, they really all of do. Them. Very boyish and like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frustrated. The only other thing that I wanted to talk about this week is these protesters that went to the Louvre and I can't even get the words out of my mouth.
Is it Dominic not to again defend the people we're making fun of? But like, I think it's a good tactic.
Here's what I think. I think that I don't like to say that people are stupid. I think it's a horrible word, but I think that throwing soup at the Mona Lisa is stupid. I do think it's stupid. Sure. I think it is a ridiculous,
but
I just think it's ridiculous.
The point is not, because not for nothing, like they know that there's glass there. Like they're not going to hit it. Like,
right.
The point
and
is
so now we're talking about that. Who moved the knee? This is what I want. I want an interview with the person who says, you know what? I started recycling because I saw these crazy dykes throw soup at the Mona Lisa. God,
Dominic.
Who says that? Who's doing it?
Yeah. No. Yeah, you're right. But it is getting the thing. It's getting the word out in the sense that the charity, like the movement is being talked about, which is important, by the way. It's not like they're like.
Which was the movement, ridiculous. Though? Did I make that up about the climate? Was it about the climate?
It's about like farmers having resources in France.
Got it.
Like it is important. It's not like they're like, we're protesting something stupid. Like it is like important that they're like, we're like running out of food and like the farmers are not like, we can't survive.
Hmm.
Like it's not. They should be eating the soup. Is that what you were going to say? I know you too well now.
You're like the AI version of me. Who's just spitting out shit that, you know, I'm going to say.
I know.
I was going to say if the farmers are hungry, I know where they can find
some
two
soup.
Cups of soup.
On the glass in front
of them. They would have to lick the Mona Lisa, but if anyone's hungry, go right up there.
Dear God.
Food? Go to the Louvre snack bar. There's food there. You can get like a $30 chocolate version of the Venus de Milo.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm not making it up. I ate it.
It's been a week. I'm not gonna lie. We're overrun with pop culture. It was slow at the beginning of the month, and now we're in feuds. Britney Spears you're calling for her head. Like Justin Timberlake is embarrassing himself. Like it's been a wild ride this week. I won't lie. And Dominic,
I was trying to segue into Katherine Heigl, and I just don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I'm gonna segue into something more important than that because Dominic. This is our 50th episode of this podcast.
God. Yay.
I'm really proud of us. Like, not to toot our own horns for a second. I'm very proud of us. 50 episodes is really hard.
And we're still friends.
And we have not taken 1 week off.
That's
since
right,
we started,
listeners.
By the way.
That's right.
You had an episode after Christmas. Before New Year's, we have not stopped since we started this on March 1st of 2023.
Yep. You know who takes off weeks? Every other podcast.
Everyone else.
Your underlings, your overlings, the government, the post office. These are all things that take off, not this podcast.
Not us.
Nope.
Not us.
Nope.
All right. Well, we have for our 50th episode, we have a very, very special guest. And so.
Very special.
Thank you.
We're fixing a very special person.
Oh, we sure are. We sure are. And Dominic, I can speak for both of us when I say that we are so thankful for all of you guys listening. 50 episodes is a big deal. And I'm really, really proud of us. And we're very, very thankful that all you guys love the podcast so much. And when you guys DM us and say, I really like this podcast, I love the podcast so much. Or when you say your well wishes, or even when you're like, please fix this person for X, Y, and Z reason. Like, it really does make us feel special. And it really, I love doing this so much. And I know you do too.
We love you.
Now let's now get to fixing. To Katherine Heigl.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
All right, Dominic, there's times in this podcast when we get a big one, and this might be the biggest one of them all. You know him. I don't even need to explain who he is. It's the queen of cozy content, Danny Pellegrino from the Everything Iconic podcast and many other things. Danny, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Dominic. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. And to talk about one of my all-time favorite topics, which is Katherine Heigl.
When I sent you the list, I was like, he's going to pick Katherine Heigl. Like, I should have just said, let's do Katherine Heigl. But then I was like, you never know. Who knows? And I sent it to you. And then immediately you were like, okay, here's my, like, here's when I can do it. And also, obviously, we're doing Katherine Heigl. So. Thank you. I'm excited for this.
So wait, you are unironically saying that Katherine Heigl is one of your favorite topics. Like you are an actual giant fan of hers. Yes.
Well, I'm a fan. I'm definitely a fan. I don't know that I'm a giant fan of her specifically, but I do feel very strongly. I have a lot of opinions for how she was treated in Hollywood, how she was very much ahead of her time in certain ways. Of course, problematic in other ways too, I think, but it's a very interesting case study. And that's why I was so excited. I feel like there was a time in my show, I've had my podcast for maybe 5 years or something, but there was a time I remember people were like, stop talking about Katherine Heigl. Cause I would always just say like, I feel so strongly that she was mistreated. And I think looking back on some of like her gaffes and failures, you know, the big ones that come to mind, which I'm sure we'll talk about, is like people were mad she threw the Grey's Anatomy writers under the bus. People were mad she threw Knocked Up under the bus. But I think even like something like Knocked Up, I always think about because she was very spot on with her analysis of that. And I think if an actor came out in present day with the same analysis of a movie, she said basically the women are shrews in that movie and the men are the ones who get to have the fun. And I think she was right about that, but she was totally maligned for that. Or even with the Grey's Anatomy thing, she said she had won an Emmy and she said, I didn't feel I got the material that deserved another Emmy. And so she wanted to open it up for somebody else to take the slot instead of just sort of slipping in there. And even though she was already awarded, and at that point, her character was doing CPR on a deer. And it's like, I actually think it was probably if that happened now, people would applaud her and say like, yeah, you gave a slot to somebody who wouldn't otherwise be recognized. Like you're stepping aside so somebody can come in here.
I'm not applauding that at all because I'll tell you what, if I get nominated for an Emmy and I'm sweating it and I'm like, wow, I sucked this year and the writing was bad and they nominate me, I'm like, I don't know how the fuck I pulled that off, but I will take this slot. Katherine and I are obviously not alike at all. Maybe that's why I have a negative opinion of her. I have no idea.
When it comes to that, Angel and Devil, like I also feel like she should not have probably said anything because those writers were writing material for it and it might not have been perfect, but you don't throw your writers under the bus. We learned that with Joe Coy when he
hosted.
She's perfect. She is not perfect by any means. Yeah. The thing that I always say with Katherine Heigl is the punishment did not fit the crime. It was like all of those gaffes that she had, a lot of that, if it was so if it was happened today, I just feel like people would take it differently. We would applaud some of the things that she was saying.
Sure. I hear you.
Yeah.
We're going to dive deeper into that. I will say, though, since we talked about Joe Coy recently, Joe Coy would have gotten a pass on Fixing Famous People if he hadn't talked about the writers. Like, we were here for, we are very big on hosting is hard. It's a much harder job than anyone gives credit for, especially a live show. And he didn't have the gig for that long. I did think he had enough lead time to do a better job, but that's just from one comic being shady to another. But if he hadn't thrown the writers under the bus, he would have, I think, gotten a full pass from Fixing Famous People. Like, that was, it was just like a bad night is a bad night, but don't do that.
That was
everybody.
That was a big gaffe. I also just think hosting, I mean, this is a tale for another time, but I do think hosts for those types of shows should, we should be celebrating whatever the awards are being given out. So it's like, that should be a celebration of movies. And I feel like they go too far with like hiring a comedian who's making fun of everything. And I like taking the piss out of things, but I just thought there was like no celebration. It's like the people who are watching love award shows, love movies and stuff. So it's like, be a celebration.
You have to, it's a roast is okay, but towing that line is very difficult. There are like Ricky Gervais is great. There were moments when he took it too far. I would even say like there were moments when it wasn't a celebration. I feel like Amy and Tina should just host. They toe that line, but they do it so well. They should host everything.
And
they should anchor the
way...
news. They should host the Oscars. They should host the apocalypse if
totally
it comes
agree.
To that. They should do all of that.
And they do it in the way that it's like, you know that I know that I'm like doing this as a joke. Like kind of like other delivery is so like you're in on it. It's funny and like they're making fun of it because they should not. Like
Danny,
they're
taking the piss. They're doing the right thing. Yes. Right. But before we dive deeper into Katherine Heigl, we do something at the top of our show, Danny, where we ask our guest and Chris to posit what our Fixie's middle name is. So what would your guess be for the middle name of Ms. Katherine Heigl? And yes, her birth name is Katherine Heigl, and she does have a middle name.
Renee.
Amy. I'm just guessing Amy. Katherine Amy Heigl. No.
You're both incorrect. There's no shame in that, but I will tell you one of the more basic middle names in the pantheon of middle names, and that is Marie.
God damn it.
Marie Heigl.
Wow. That's
Has anyone ever gotten it right,
name.
Chris? Someone got it right recently,
someone
right?
Got someone it got like it half right. Right. Someone got it half right. So we've yet to have a full guess. Right, correct. It's never going to happen.
One of these days.
One of these days. So what do we... I mean, Katherine Heigl. She was definitely on shows before Grey's Anatomy, but Grey's Anatomy obviously launched her into like the fame that started what we know as Katherine Heigl, in my opinion.
And did you boys watch Grey's Anatomy?
Oh, religiously.
Okay.
Watched Grey's Anatomy for the first like 10 years.
Infrequently.
Yeah.
Infrequently.
No, from the beginning of the show up until like after she leaves, a couple seasons after that, it was still really good. Like, really. Now when you watch it, you're like, what on fucking earth is this? Like, it is so terrible. But like, when we watched the old seasons, like when all the original cast was there, my God, it was good.
Perfect TV. Those early, I'd even argue like 1, 2, 3 are like perfect TV.
Perfect TV. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. You have cliffhangers every episode. You have like an episodic story that teaches the doctor's a lesson and then also plays to what's going on in the world. Like, it was so good in the first couple seasons, and all of them, mainly Katherine Heigl, skyrocket. Like, she's 100% the most famous person that's on that show.
Yeah.
And like today, right now.
I watched pretty much up until maybe 3 seasons ago. I think I dipped out during the COVID season.
So I
stuck with it a really long time.
Oh,
and then
Danny.
all of a sudden we hit the COVID years and there was like this weird beach thing. I don't even know how to explain, so I won't, but it got like way too
well, it turned into Desperate Housewives, where it was like, remember when on Desperate Housewives, they're like, a plane crash just like hit into someone's home. Like, there was a tornado down the street. It turned into Desperate Housewives. Yeah. Like, the shooter in the hospital was like exhilarating. And then they tried to top that every year after. And it was just, there's a plane crash and all these main characters die because they don't want to be on the show anymore. Like, there's this happens and then like an explosion and then there's the dock rips apart and there was all these like natural disasters happening that was like too much.
I didn't also, even know the show was still on until they, still, they reunited at the Emmys. Yes. And so in for 30 seconds, I thought, oh, I guess the show is canceled. And my friend Amanda was like, this show's still on television. Like, no.
Dominic,
because it's
it
like season
20, kicking.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's like season 40.
I think even more than that. Yeah. And also Grey's isn't even there anymore. Ellen Pompeo is like just sort of a guest star now. And so she's not a full time cast
are
member.
Are any of the people that were on the beginning, are any of them still on it?
No, but also, this is interesting, actually, not to bring us to reality TV. I'm sorry to do that all the time. But I feel it's similar. We talk about how the early seasons are so good, but it's like that initial cast was cast with like with chemistry in mind.
Yes.
And so they were cast to have this perfect chemistry. And then as slowly you start taking the people out and they start putting in new people, it's like that original chemistry is gone and sort of the character dynamics don't work as well in the puzzle.
Yeah, no. And it turned into like a spot, like, oh, I'm going to do a guest spot on this show versus like, I remember when it was like, remember when like the new residents were coming in like the first couple seasons, it was like, oh my God, there's these new characters and like, what's going to happen? And they like layered it so well where they, you know, the new people intermingled, Sarah Ramirez as Callie, Dr. Callie, like coming in and like, shaking it up and like being drawn. Yeah, it was such a good show and it's just so terrible.
But what was great about it, even when I wasn't watching it, you felt like you were watching it because the cast was so big and so scandalized at every turn, whether it was like McSteamy or McDreamy. And then someone called T.R. Knight a faggot. And then Katherine Heigl said that the writers were shit. And all these things just kept happening. It was like, what is going on Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
It was
their shadow publicist did a brilliant job 10 years ago keeping all of these people in the spotlight, ruining their personal lives, but definitely keeping the show on the tip of everyone's tongue for sure.
There's a fantastic book about the oral history of Grey's Anatomy that came out, I think, last year. Maybe it was 2 years ago now. But if anyone listening is a fan of Grey's Anatomy, I thought it was so good. And it goes into sort of all those scandals. And I'm trying to think of like what big takeaway. I felt like one of the big takeaways was I don't think people loved Patrick Dempsey. Am I making that up? I don't know. It's interesting. Everyone should go read it if they're into that.
Several people that I follow on socials over the past couple of years, I want to say, and I thought this would become a bigger deal during COVID, and maybe it did, and I'm not aware, but they'd never seen Grey's before, and they started over the past few years just watching from season one and sort of posting their emotional journey. And like you guys are saying, like it was obviously the first 3 years were a whirlwind emotionally for everyone watching the show. But then they all sort of summarily died off, I want to say around season 7 or 8. So I don't know what happened around that time Shonda left the show officially or however it went down. But they're really going through it as though they have discovered like this Rosetta Stone for TV drama, the greatest thing ever. But then all fall off like at the same amount of time. And yet the show has endured for a decade beyond where people have fallen off.
Yeah. I will be honest with you guys. There's a piece of me that will probably dip back into the show. So I just want to get that out there that I know I said it's terrible and I stopped after the COVID season. But like there's certainly a likely world in a year if I hear somebody coming back. After that Emmy thing happened where Katherine Heigl was with that group, I thought, please, we have to get that character back on there. Yeah, the character didn't die.
Yeah.
And I've been begging for that forever. And so if there's a world where we get Katherine Heigl back on there, even for a guest stint, like I'm back on board. And just, so everything just I said earlier is erased.
Just to come into the just to come into the hospital and say, I did cut the LVAD wire and I do it again and then leave. Like that's all we need. It's
if we get that, I will be on board for at least 3 more seasons, like despite it just being one moment or scene.
Sure.
She becomes super famous on the show and like the rumors start coming out that she's difficult to work with. And then let's really quickly for people that don't know, like recap, basically she doesn't feel that her character is being portrayed correctly. And instead of what she would do, but like goes to the press to say like, I don't like what the writers are writing for me. Then when she's nominated for an Emmy, pulls out her Emmy, like says, I don't want to be consider me for this Emmy because like the work that I did is not Emmy worthy. as and to let's like flesh slam out the writers.
Totally. And let's flesh out this timeline a little more because there's some details that make her behavior a little more shocking. So she's on Grey's Anatomy, and while she's on Grey's Anatomy, Knocked Up comes out, which is in, and I would love to say that I had all this memorized, but we know that's not true. 2007. So it comes out in spring of 2007. She then wins her Emmy for Grey's Anatomy in September of 2007. So Katherine Heigl is white hot in 2007. Like, she can do no wrong. Then 2008 comes out, which I believe would be Catherine's Annus Horribilis, as the queen used to say, where I guess it was when 27 Dresses came out that she started talking shit both about Knocked Up and then about not wanting to be nominated for an Emmy that year. And she was being positioned. This I do remember vividly. Like, she was being positioned as the heir apparent to Julia Roberts in the rom-com space. Like, they just thought she was being groomed to be a movie star.
100%. And 27 Dresses was a humongous success. It was it's a great movie. Yeah. It was like a huge it was a huge romantic comedy. And there wasn't many coming out like that anymore.
And 27 Dresses was sort of on the end of that era of romantic comedies where it was one of the last few sort of even recognizably good or decent ones. And it came out in January, which is like sort of an unexpected time to release movies, or usually those are bad movies, but it was a huge success. And you mentioned the heir apparent. I also just want to say, I feel like I have a vague memory of Anne Hathaway, I believe, was supposed to be in Knocked Up as the lead. And I don't know if she dropped out or what happened, but then Catherine, I believe, took over that at the, I think it was like the last minute. I didn't research that, but I think it was pretty, her rise to stardom, I think, was probably so unexpected. And finally, I just want to also mention her mom, which are you going to mention her mom? Her mom
I
was her manager.
Absolutely. That's why you're here, Danny.
I just want to say a lot of the difficulty on set and stuff like that, I think a lot of that stemmed from her mom is, I believe, still her manager, sort of like a momager. And so there are always rumors about her mom being sort of a difficult presence on set.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't have many details about that, but I do know that there's stuff about the mom that I think was part of things too.
Interesting. Yeah. Ooh. Oof. That hurts.
Yeah. Huh. But okay. So me sticking up for the Heigls,
do it.
I do think that it was it was a case of like her mom being her manager. I think if she had other representation who was maybe fighting on her behalf, it would have been accepted different amongst executives and stuff like that. Yeah, so I think it would have. I don't know. I think that was
And I think the other thing is we hear her being like, the writers suck, but like, do we know anything about when they, how many times she went into the writer's room and were like, please write me a good storyline. Like, what about this? And they were like, no. And they were like, you know, remember? And like, you'll know this reference, Danny, but like in The Comeback, when she just keeps begging the two writers to write her something good. And they are just so fucking rude to her. And so like, why do I picture it being that? Like,
She's
like, can I not be doing CPR on a deer? And the writer, the big, huge fat writer eating nachos, just going, no. And just going back to his computer, like typing away. Like,
I do think though that writing was insane at that season that she was up for that Emmy.
But like, how many times we only know that she was like throwing the writers under the bus publicly, but like there could have been a war going on between them.
So just recently, Jenna Ortega, who stars in Wednesday, that show on Netflix, she threw those writers under the bus in an interview. Okay. It got like sort of picked up a little bit, but for the most part, it was even happening, I think, like right around the writer's strike. But you see, everyone sort of culturally moved on. But when Katherine Heigl did it in a much less, I think, antagonistic way, at least in my view, because Jenna Ortega's comments were pretty bad about the writers, I believe. Katherine took so much for so long about that. And look at Jenna Ortega did it, and she's fine. She's great.
Well, and I think it's also, like, there's so many other things going on in the world that we can just blow us right by. But like, the biggest star of the biggest show on television that just had a humongous movie come out, that's like catnip for our paper of note people.com's Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
And I do agree with you that she was definitely ahead of her time. This is pre Me Too. This is pre like
Time's Up. This is pre-Weinstein. It's pre so many things that are like, if this happened today, we'd be like, huh? Like, we'd be like, she's crazy. Like, LOL. Anyway, like, we would just, it would not have been, she really did get branded. Like, I remember even not even knowing all the stories and being like, oh yeah, she's like a fucking monster because she like, that set was crazy. And she like left because they couldn't all deal with her.
And which, she like, kept getting, yeah, she kept getting it. Like, it was even, I remember Seth Rogen and Jada Apatow, like when they would do press appearances, or one of them was on Howard Stern and like threw her under the bus again. And I love them. I mean, but I just felt like she just kept getting it. And her comments, I never thought her comments were ever that bad, like whether it be about the Emmy thing or about Knocked Up. It's like, God.
Well, she still gets it. I mean, she's still sort of the bellwether of anyone who's ever complained about anything. I mean, even when Constance Wu got into trouble for her, you know, remarks that she made about her series coming back a couple of years ago, in many articles they reference, oh, this is just like what Katherine Heigl did, and look what happened to her, and now it's happening to Constance Wu. And P.S., it did happen to Constance Wu, because we do not hear from her much anymore. So, you know, maybe it's not the best rule, but, you know, fucking with writers seems to be something that will put very talented people on the back burner. But
yeah,
I don't remember like vividly, like I said at the beginning, I just have like a negative view of Katherine Heigl because I'm a sheep, and there's other things happening with pop culture, and I was just like, oh, she's difficult, she hates her writers. I am a writer, so I hear that and I'm just like, fuck you forever. And there's no coming back from it. But there probably was an air of, you know, when Chris was describing her as like the hottest person on the hottest show and also in the hottest rom-com, it's like, you do have to, as a celebrity, be careful. Like, if you're seen complaining about anything when you're in that catbird seat, that had to play a part of it, where you're just like, this white blonde woman's being handed the entire planet and she's complaining about it. So goodbye. I mean, it could very well have been,
or
the
like, get a load moment of this one. Get a load of this when she's in one fucking rom-com and now she thinks she's better than the show.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? Like that, like, I can see that happening.
Sure.
You know, which is like valid, like, you know, but.
But then I always wonder how many times is she supposed to complain, like, or apologize for this stuff? Because apologized. There was like an Entertainment Weekly cover where she's folding her hands and like, I think the headline is like, I'm sorry. And then she had to go on Meredith Vieira's show. Like, and still to this day, every appearance she does, I feel like has that where she has to apologize. She has to be overly friendly and nice because she knows that the minute she turns off that smile, everybody's going to, oh, there she is, a nasty piece of work again. And it's like, what is she supposed to do?
Yeah. No, it's hard. People have done and said much worse, and it has been treated much more incidentally than it was for her. It just, I mean, what do you say? It just had to be sort of time and place.
Perfect
and,
storm.
Yeah. No, and like, she's just never going to get over it, you know?
This was also right before they, like, back then, it was the very end of the time where a network or like the executives like controlled everything that you had, versus she could have, like, if this happened today, she would like go on Instagram Live and like explain herself, and we'd all be like, okay. And like, no one would care. Like, it would turn, it was still in that time, at the very end of that time, where like social media doesn't exist. Like, she can't just get like a message to the people. She has to like go through all these channels. And I read an article where she said that she basically was like, I think I apologized like too much. And every time I would apologize, I would like reignite what I was apologizing for instead of just doing it once and trying to move on. Like, I did too much of that. And it like, it shot me in the, I shot myself in the foot.
I hope that one day she has like a big project, and that people sort of culturally look back on a lot of these things we're talking about and maybe just look at them through another lens. Because we so often look back on media from the 2000s and stuff, whether it be people like Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, like we're constantly sort of reanalyzing that. But we haven't reached that moment with all this Katherine Heigl stuff. And obviously there are bigger things to talk about. And I'm not saying that that's what the world should be focused on. But I do think there will eventually be some more culturally people looking back on that time and saying, wait, were we wrong about that? Or was the punishment
happening
not too hard?
You're not far off at all, actually, because I think that that's happening. And for that time period, because of And I can't believe in the span of how long have we been talking, a half hour? I'm almost now, you sort of made me change my opinion about Katherine Heigl mildly, but because of, and I can't believe I'm going to say these two words, but hey, y'all, I think that the reckoning for Britney Spears is sort of turning our... It's we're rewriting our own mental history about how we mm-hmm. feel about these things because mm-hmm. it's from the same period of time too. You're talking about like 2006 to 2010 or so, which is
well, yeah, 2007 was a year. Like, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
That
was,
oh yeah, a lot went down that year. Britney and Catherine. Yep. Yeah, so there is a world where you lump them in the same basket, which is like, why didn't anyone listen to me? I wasn't that wrong. Why did you treat me like shit? There is
yeah.
a moment, and that's the whole. That's the those are the Britney, Paris, Lilo years as well. Like those are yeah. pretty hot years in pop culture history.
You know, I feel very similarly with Katherine Heigl as I do with Meg Ryan. I love Meg Ryan. Chris probably knows this, but I love her. But I think the media also treated her in a similar way with all the Dennis Quaid and Russell Crowe stuff, and she was really villainized for so much in her looks. And I mean, even I could talk for hours about Meg Ryan's looks being so maligned by media, because nowadays, if you go back and look at 2007, 2008 Meg Ryan, which was when she was doing like The Women, she looks stunningly beautiful and actually looks like she has less work done than the majority of people on screen do now. But she was like the poster child for like, oh, bad botched work. And every magazine cover was that. And
yeah.
And now I look back on that time we were talking about that, and it's like, she looks phenomenal and also so much less filler and whatever than
yes, what yeah. By today's standards, now. You're like, yeah, what? Like, you're like, I don't even see any fillers compared to what people are doing today to their faces for no reason at all.
She took all those punches. She took all the punches about her yeah. relationship with Dennis Quaid, even though we found out much later that he had been cheating, and there was all this stuff. But it was like, she became the villain punching bag, and it really fucked her career. Like, with Catherine, was it just a, I can't remember. Was it just a press release? Because if so, also it seems crazy. It seems sort of crazy that a PR person would have put out that statement. Because I thought Catherine's was like a professional PR statement, like to the Emmy voters or something, that just said, I don't feel I've been given the material. But I thought it came through like a press thing. I don't think it was just like.
Probably. I would assume so.
Well, and in which case, Wikipedia. It's like crazy to think that a PR person was like, yeah, let's release that.
Well, the comments about Knocked Up were in a Vanity Fair interview. Okay. I'm getting this off Wikipedia. I do not have this memorized. She admitted that although she enjoyed working with Judd Apatow and Seth Rogen when she started Knocked Up, she had a hard time enjoying the film because she called the film, quote, a little sexist, claiming that the film paints the women as shrews, as humorless and uptight, and it paints the men as lovable, goofy, fun-loving guys. Apatow and Rogan were reportedly not pleased with Heigl's interview. So that one sentence there might be a key to this whole puzzle.
Yeah, I remember them years later. I don't know if it was Seth or Judd or both, but addressing it on Howard Stern. And I remember thinking, like, they just went too hard for her again. It was like, exactly the quote that she said about Knocked Up is exactly right. I mean, she's spot on.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. and also proving the point of like, yeah, this is sexist. Yeah, because I'm the person that's in the wrong because I'm the woman here that's complaining
and fucking
being a
somebody
shrew.
Needed,
yeah,
people needed to say it at that time. We weren't getting movies like starring, especially comedic movies starring women at that time, and so it's like she was criticizing it. I think to also help women have better roles in comedies and stuff. And not at that time, all those Apatow movies were like the only comedies getting made. And it was like, she was just saying, yeah, we shouldn't want the female characters in these movies to just always be the shrews, always be just so the supporting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she has said since then, not really apologetically, but she's like, I stand by my opinion. I'm disheartened that it's become the focus of my experience with the movie because my motive was to encourage other women to not take certain elements of the movie too seriously and to remember it's a broad comedy. So it really is sort of akin to the stuff Molly Ringwald has been saying about John Hughes. But again, maybe she did it too soon. Maybe Judd Apatow and Seth Rogen are babies and were instrumental in blackballing her. I don't know.
You know what they produced after she gave that quote? They produced Bridesmaids. And so maybe it had a little impact.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Maybe it had a little... You'd be like, okay, we need to do a female-led comedy. I do love the Apatow comedies. I feel like I'm talking shit. And I think I like think Seth Rogen.
I mean, no, you're just saying what happened. That we're reading stuff on the internet. It is what it is.
Yeah, no, they're great, but they're like anything. They are of the moment. I mean, there are things I watch in Moonstruck and I'm like, I wince. And then I remember it's Moonstruck. It's beyond reproach. And then I come back to Earth. But still, there are you can find it in anything. You know, I mean, anything's going to be of the moment it was made.
And I wonder what they feel about the whole situation now. Like, I would love to hear what Judd and Seth feel if there was, if maybe they do look back on it and say, oh, you know, she was right about that, or we shouldn't have been so sensitive, or whatever it was.
Sure.
Well, and you know what's funny is that she's teed up, they teed it up very well at the Emmys because they all were holding hands with her when she delivered the line that was like, and some of us have gone away since, like, the show, or like some of us have gone away from the show since it started, or something, whatever her line was. And she was holding hands with Ellen Pompeo and someone else next to her. And it was like very much like a unity looking kind of like, we're here for you kind of a, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It was very much like we stand in solidarity with Katherine Heigl, like approach. And I think that tees her up very well for like a comeback in the sense that
I hope so. Ellen's always had her back. Ellen Pompeo, like they did an Actors on Actors last year. And then also I remember seeing some other interview, I think in a podcast or something, but, and Ellen has been very defending of Catherine on her own podcast, which I don't know that she still has, but I did listen to her podcast a long time ago. And she was always like, basically defending Katherine Heigl. So I think they had a good relationship. And I do believe Katherine has a good relationship with people like Kate Walsh and other people from the show. Obviously, she was really close with T.R. Knight. If you didn't know any of that, I feel like you just look at Katherine Heigl and you're like, oh, she's such an asshole. And because of those headlines, and it doesn't fit the crime.
Well, and again, it's like, because we see the one part that's out in the open. We don't, like, who knows how many times she had gotten in fights with the executives being like, why am I on the show if you're just going to, like, throw me to the wolves? Do you know what I mean? Like, if
she
I'm
also
just,
fucked
like,
a ghost. She fucked a ghost. Do you remember that?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I forgot.
This I actually know about. Yes, God, this because it's her dead partner came back or something, right? This I remember reading about.
All of a sudden in my head, it was like, I just had a flash of it just now. I was like, oh yeah, God, she fucked a ghost. Like,
she cuts, one of the biggest things of the entire season in one of her final seasons is that she starts like falling in love with this like heart patient that needs like a transplant. She on purpose cuts his like LVAD wire that like is keeping him alive so that he'll code so that he'll jump to the top of the list for a heart transplant. And then he ends up dying. And so like the end of the season is her like grappling with the loss. And then eventually they use it to like get her off of the show. Cause she like runs away. Cause she's like done such a bad thing.
Now I'm wondering if the writers must've hated her, right? Like now I'm thinking,
well, I think after all this, they were like this stupid bitch. Like we're running you right out of town. You know what I mean? That's what I think.
Yeah, that's the piece of the puzzle that I must have missed, because now that I'm thinking of the ghost sex and the deer situation that she gave CPR to, that came after.
So they hated her. Retaliation. That was retaliation. Yeah,
they hated her by that point.
Okay. Yeah. They were like, what else? What other? Again, like Valerie Cherish. Like, what other dumb things can we make her do to like until she runs away?
God, I love now I just want to rewatch it and just think of her as Valerie Cherish.
I know, but I she's like not though, because I think she's I don't know. Anyway,
didn't she also do a movie with Gerard Butler? Am I making that up?
It was called The Ugly Truth. I was googling because I was like, there are more rom-coms than 27 Dresses. Obviously that's the one that comes to mind, but like she then did have some decently successful other like rom-coms. There was one called
Ashton Kutcher
called The Killers.
Yeah,
and they were like,
I'm looking at this.
They
now.
Were like assassins or something. I remember that was like all over billboards and like cabs in the city. I remember when that was coming out, and it was like on every cab in New York.
More recently, I saw that movie she did where she's like a killer or something. Not a killer, but she's a killer. It's sort of like that Beyonce movie, Obsessed, but it's with Katherine Heigl. And I thought that was going to be, to me, that was like going to kickstart the renaissance for her, and then it didn't.
It was called Unforgettable.
Is it called Unforgettable with Rosario Dawson?
Yes, Rosario Dawson. Okay. That's a good, like, if you want a pulpy, cheap thriller, like, that's a good rental for the weekend, anyone who's listening. Like, it's good in that bad way.
she was going to be, remember she was like a rom-com star that was like actually a murderer and she, or something. And it was called One for the Money. She was in
that. Yeah, I saw that.
Like she was
too.
In movies. Yeah. Like it's not like she didn't.
They just like get slower and slower and worse less and less successful. But I think that Netflix show she did was really successful. I didn't watch that. But I do think that did really well.
It did really well. When it came out, like when the final season came out, it was like, I think, number one. I know one of the girls that plays like not her, but the other main character as the younger version. And she, like, it was, I know that it was successful. A lot of people watched it. It was called Firefly Lane.
Oh, yeah, Firefly.
Right.
Yeah. But again, like, that didn't do, it's like Sarah Chalk, who used to be on Roseanne, and then, like, and, like, a few other things, and then, like, these other actors, and then Katherine Heigl. You know what I mean? It's like, she's very out of place for, like, all the things she's doing now. It's like, she's way too famous to be, like, in this ensemble cast thing, you know?
Yeah. It's sad. And she did a bunch of ensemble cast things because she did New Year's Eve, which I love.
Yes.
It's a crazy, crazy fucking movie, but
dear God,
terrible movie, but I love it. and then also she did something called like The Big Wedding, which was like an ensemble.
Yes.
Robert
De
Niro, Diane Keaton. Uh-huh. But that one was bad. I didn't like that one. But New Year's Eve, I fucking ride hard for. I love it.
That is part of that Gary Marshall 13 incomplete storyline ensemble films. Yeah, like absolutely insane.
There were rumors about that movie. I don't know if this was true, and I shouldn't be spreading these rumors because here I am defending Katherine Heigl, but there were rumors that her and Sofia Vergara on New Year's Eve didn't get along. But I, because all their scenes are together. But I love... I'm always looking at Katherine interviews. Just recently, she was on, I don't know if it was, what was the last award show, but she was interviewed by Laverne Cox. And they also were in a CBS show together that only lasted like 6 episodes or something. It was like nothing. But I was really watching like how Laverne talked to Katherine, and they seemed like really close and friendly. And I'm always looking, just like with Ellen Pompeo and her, I'm like looking to see, is she an asshole? Like you can usually tell people they work with, they'll be a little colder, right? Like I thought maybe Laverne will be colder to Katherine if she was an asshole on set. But Laverne was super nice and friendly. Now, Laverne might have just been being professional, but I feel like every time I see Katherine with some of her old cast member co-stars,
it
seems like
around.
Everybody
they're
likes her. Yeah. But maybe the other
that, fake.
You're talking about the CBS 2017 legal drama called Doubt, where she had a lead role in it. It was canceled after 2 episodes, but they did burn out its remaining
2 episodes. Only 2 episodes.
Canceled after 2. A couple years before then, though, I guess I didn't realize that the Heigl comeback has been attempted many times, at least on television. And in 2014, she had the lead in the NBC political drama State of Affairs, which was well received, but still canceled after 1 season. I don't think I realized actually that she also appeared in the last 2 seasons of Suits. So she was Markle adjacent at least for some time. Yeah.
Hold on, Dominic. You're blowing my mind. She was on Suits?
I'm reading you.
How did I not know
this? I'm reading you. Unless Wikipedia is wrong. This is why I don't give it $5, no matter how many times it pops up when I go there.
No, but I think it's right because it's sort of flushing back to me. But that's wild. I never watched Suits, but I wonder if people who are all binging Suits now because it's been – this big thing with young people. Now, are they getting to the Katherine Heigl seasons? And what do they think? Now I need to go watch Suits and just get to those seasons.
Are those people even old enough to remember the Heigl downfall?
Do they even know who she is?
They don't even know who she is. They don't even know. The young people probably are like, who the fuck is this?
Although young people do binge. She was on the last 2 seasons of the show, of Suits.
She's a plucky young upstart is what they think. You know what I mean?
And young people do rewatch Grey's Anatomy. I feel like that's popular with young people, because I know I have little cousins, young cousins who watch it.
I feel like I feel like it dabbled being in the area that Suits is in now or has been the past year. I feel like there's a whole Grey's moment that's going to happen. And I feel like this sort of half reunion on the Emmys would be the beginning of it. It started happening during COVID, but I feel like Suits became like the mantle of like a show that's gone and all of a sudden gets rediscovered. What I am thinking as I'm like listening to you and chatting and going online, it's like Grey's Anatomy is sort of like the Kardashian family of television. Like anyone that gets in its orbit is just destroyed. It doesn't mean they're bad people, but they just shouldn't have stuck their toe in this water. I mean, you're looking at like TR and Catherine and McSteamy and even like Eric Dane and like all these people, like they've been like there's been, if it wasn't negative, their association with the show, bad shit happened to them after they became a participant on the show. All of them. Well,
at least they could cry into their money, because I feel like Grey's must have made them so rich. I feel like it was one of those last big network shows that
I hope that's true.
Everywhere. So they're probably rich. I just rewatched that movie, Valentine's Day.
Oh my God, another Gary Marshall.
I know.
Yeah. Taylor Swift and Taylor Lautner, right? Remember when they were dating, quote unquote, humongous air quotes dating? Like, yeah.
There's a Grey's Anatomy in there, though, because it's Eric Dane and Patrick Dempsey are both in it.
You're right.
I feel like there's maybe someone else.
Not for nothing, Eric Dane has parlayed into a good career. Like, him as the dad in Euphoria is exceptional.
Right.
Truly.
Yeah, he's also just hot.
He is. You know what I'm thinking? Is he married to Rebecca Gayhart, Eric Dane?
I think they might be divorced now, or I think they're divorced.
I'm not concerned about being factually correct ever on this podcast, but didn't she kill somebody? Did she hit someone with her car? God.
I feel like that sounds familiar. I do remember didn't they have a sex tape leak or something?
Let's play a game.
I think they had a sex tape or something.
Hey Siri, is Rebecca Gayhart a murderer?
Okay, I found this on the web for is Rebecca Gayhart a murderer?
Okay, it was a yes or no. Fuck off. In 2001, while driving a vehicle owned by Italian actor Marco Leonardi, she struck 9-year-old Jorge Cruz Jr. as he walked across the street in Los Angeles. The child died the following day from his injuries. That's getting so dark. I don't even care how it is. I didn't know it was a kid.
I sort of vaguely remember now. Santa Monica. I think, yeah, that's sad.
There was a nude video. You were right. Gawker posted a nude video of Gayhart and her then husband Eric Dane,
and another woman. I think they were it was a threesome or something.
It was former Miss Teen USA contestant Carrie Ann Peniche. I did have memorized. JK, I read it right from Wikipedia. The sponsor of this week's episode. This is Catherine's moment. I mean, Danny, you really have sort of changed my tone about her.
I'm sorry, Dominic.
Please don't apologize. I'm not obsessed with it. I do occasionally like being corrected in public in front of Chris and our audience. So thanks, Danny.
The audience is probably like, this guy just obsessed with Catherine Heigl. But I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. I think you're right. I think that she has been overly abused. And I do think that she is on the verge of a comeback. I do think that her appearing on the Emmys was sort of
the pebble that starts
that ripple. And as I'm doing the research, because it's always good to do the research during the actual broadcast rather than before, because I'm very busy not doing anything, that her co-stars in recent years have come out to defend her. And when she was doing that show you guys were talking about earlier, Firefly Lane, during the press for that, in 2021 was when she said that she was done apologizing for her past reputation and being labeled as difficult and all that stuff. And Ellen Pompeo, your girl, as you said in an interview just last year, Heigl would have been branded a hero today for her remarks in 2009 about their 17-hour workday. Catherine Heigl was ahead of her time. She made a statement about our crazy hours. And of course, it was like, let's slam a woman and call her ungrateful.
Okay, now I'm remembering that. Yeah, Ellen came out and said that, which also, would be looked at so differently now today if an actor was saying it's dangerous for us to be on these.
They all did. They all just did when we were doing the strike. They did.
And it's not just Ellen, but Josh Duhamel. Duhamel. He did that other movie, which I actually really liked, where they adopt the kid because the siblings die or something. I forget what the name of it is, but it's like more of a drama. But he's come out and said really wonderful things about her. I just saw an interview where the interviewer sort of alluded like, oh, Catherine must have been a piece of work. And he's like, no, like she was great. Like whatever. James Marsden also has come out and said like what a delight she was working. So it seems to me like most of the people who have worked with her, there were people and everyone's going to have a bad experience. But it seems like a lot of her co-stars or former co-stars have come out and said things as well in her defense.
Yeah.
And they are developing 28 dresses or 27 dresses.
I've heard.
I don't know if it'll happen, but I do know they are trying to figure that out.
I hope they hear anything further about that. Let us know.
I did have a meeting about it, but it's not, I'm not writing it, but I did. But I do think that they're trying to figure out a take for that.
Which is their mistake for you not writing it. Because look at what you've done on this for an hour. Yes.
That was what I was trying. That's probably why they didn't hire me, because I was in the meeting.
They're like, this fucking psychopath won't stop talking. They're like, we get it.
They're like, we want to do a movie.
Well, they're like, we can get him in within 50 feet of Katherine Heigl, kill her.
Like, they're like, actually, we want to center it on their kids. And I'm like, no, it's starring, you know, like she's the lead and whatever.
Yeah.
They're not doing my take of it. But I think that, I do feel very strongly about her. And I think that rom-com fans, like, we love 27 Dresses and Knocked Up. And so I think she's ripe for it. Going forward, I think what would be interesting is getting her on board. There are talks about doing another Knocked Up. They did Knocked Up and then This Is 40, but Catherine didn't appear in This Is 40. So it was like a sequel, starring Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann. But they've recently said they want to do, I could think This Is 50 or whatever it is now. Judd Apatow has said that in an interview. And I think that could be such a great way, get that character back in there, even if it's just a little cameo. I think that would tell everyone, like, oh, they're good now. You know, we can move on at least from that portion of the thing.
Right.
I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah.
I think she's too good for it. I think them sort of like passively forgiving her in that way, I think she's transcended it at this point. Mm. This hour has truly changed my mind about her. I'm not fucking around. Like, I'm reading all the stuff. I'm hearing your opinion. It's like, you know what? She got fucked over. She truly got fucked over. She really did.
But that's kind of the power of the media too. It's like, we just sort of inhale these things, and whatever the opinion coming at us is tends to be a lot of times what we just take away from the experience. So,
oh yeah. We're like, oh, this person's a monster. Got it. Like, understood. And then we move on with our day. Yeah.
Oh, an asshole. Okay. Yeah. I never want to work with her. Moving on.
Yeah.
And sometimes like, I think it's not the case, but sometimes it is.
Yeah. I've already forgiven Joe Coy. Like, I know that he knows he fucked up and he's on the verge of fucking his career up forever. I don't know if he's apologized for it, but I know he knows he's wrong. And I don't think we need to like rake him over the coals forever. And I have now, Katherine Heigl did not seek my forgiveness, nor
would she care?
But if I were in a position, I would say,
I care.
I don't forgive you because you didn't, it turns out you didn't do anything wrong. You have my apology, not my forgiveness, Katherine Heigl. I can't believe the words that are coming out of my mouth. I really can't. So we're ready to pitch?
I'm ready if you are.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Katherine Heigl.
This is my best. This is my best time too, by the way. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Chris, but there's nothing better to me than getting invited to talk about this topic. So I just have to thank you both. Okay, go ahead.
You're welcome.
We're happy to do a 5-hour episode and not pitch and just go. We'll take every one of these fucking movies that throws apart. We'll just do it. We may need to have you back. Well, we may need to do one about Grey's Anatomy because we might need to fix them. I want to be a little more versed on it, and maybe in 6 months you come back.
Okay, please, and read that book. I'll reread it too, but it's like an oral history. I don't know the name of it, but it's so juicy.
I guess if I knew it was that fucking bonkers, I'd be as big of a fan of it as the two of you. It feels like something now that I should be watching. CPR on a deer really sold me. My whole life has changed since you watched it.
And there was just so – we dipped into like some of the drama, but there was a lot of drama on that set.
At one point there was like a – yeah. No, especially –
it was a lot of shit.
There was like at one point there was a barge had like ripped in half and people were like drowning in the ocean and they had to like jump in the water to save people. It was crazy.
Okay. Chris,
remember the time that the lion escaped and there was a lion running down the street and they had
This is why I didn't get into it because I was, you know, we're all always watching 30 things at one time that we're obsessed with equally. And Grey's Anatomy always just felt like a lifestyle rather than a television show. I was like, I felt like it would take over everything the way that ER did when I was in college or whatever. I was like, I can't do this again. I can't do it. Now I can't wait to watch it.
And now there's so many episodes that I think it becomes overwhelming to people to think, oh, I'm going to binge it because there's so many seasons. But I think if somebody has never watched it, just go into a binge thinking, I'm just going to make it to season 5, like, or just do the first 5 or whatever. And then just say, oh, I'm going to be done with it then. Because those first handful of seasons are so fucking good. And you won't have the pressure of thinking that, oh, I got to get through 30 seasons of the show or whatever. Just stick to 5.
You'll know when you get to a plane crash where multiple people on the cast die. Just
you'll know. Yeah.
Like
P.S. They did the same thing on a little soap opera called Falcon Crest in like 1986, where everyone's contracts were up. So they put everyone in a private plane and just nosedived it, and then no one knew who was coming back in September.
God,
so
that's funny.
I see you, Shonda Rhimes. You recycle.
Okay,
go ahead, Chris.
Katherine Heigl. In the vein of Miss Brittany Jean Spears, Esquire, published author of record-breaking book, I want Katherine Heigl to do a memoir. I want it to just be like, boom, boom, boom. Like, here is exactly what happened. I'm giving you names. I'm giving you this. It is then Ellen Pompeo said blank, 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 defending me. The executives told her blank, blank, blank. I become the villain, blah, blah, blah. Like, I want, like, truly line by line, everything that happened on the set. I want to hear all about Isaiah Washington, right? That was his name, Isaiah Washington, and T.R. Knight. I want to hear all about how apparently Patrick Dempsey was no treat on the set of the show either. So I want to hear him. Like how he was with her. I want to hear
how Chase from the mom.
What? Yeah. Oh, I need to hear all about the mom. Yeah. The mom is like in it. I need to hear about the mom. Was the mom shut out of the meetings? Blah, blah, blah. I need to hear everything, like all about it. And then honestly, talk about the aftermath and how she couldn't get jobs or she tried to do this and they really wanted, like, it's one of those things that, first of all three of us, it would be our pornography. But like, yeah, really that thing of like them trying so hard to restart her career and it never working, and like talking about the cultural impact. And like, and then I saw Harvey Weinstein go down and I thought, wow, I really wish that I could, you know, I really wish people would have been behind me whenever I spoke out, blah, 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 you know. Looking at all of it through a Me Too lens, like, and it, I think it could really, if she got the right co-writer, it would be a groundbreaking book. That she does that, and then like obviously then she does a press tour, and then it's like she's going on podcasts, she's doing this, she's doing that, and then it really gets the conversations going of like the executives in Hollywood like wanted me out, and so they got me out, and this is the story. And like,
yeah,
yeah,
I would love that. And I was a ghostwriter before years ago. And I think the impetus or the idea behind a memoir, it would be so tempting to do like a lifelong memoir. But what I think would be so interesting, one of you mentioned, but like just focusing on 2007 to 2010 or something. And then of course you can like get into Ellen defending that behavior later down the road or something. But if she just like did a memoir about like 2 years or something, it would at least be different. Cause I don't know that we need to hear like, oh, when I was in kindergarten, I did a school play and that made me want to act. Like, I always hate memoirs that go too far backwards.
Yeah, Catherine, not interested.
Just do that career focused, like talk about that height and that time. And
it was the first day on set of a young new show called Grey's
Open
Anatomy.
On that.
It was going to be in the same vein as the hit TV show, smash hit ER. But it was by this young upstart named Shonda Rhimes. Blah, blah, blah. Like, that's the first sentence.
Yeah. Get right into the juice. Get right into the goss. Oh, yep. I love that.
Dominic. That's your pitch.
That's my pitch.
I am going to be, I believe for you, Christopher, shockingly uncircus-like with Katherine Heigl. The fact that I have any respect for her is actually a huge turnaround from the top of this hour, I will be honest. The transformative powers of Mr. Danny Pellegrino have truly changed the tone of this podcast. But
I'm honored.
I'm trying to think of other controversial people who I feel maybe have been treated unfairly and use that template. And I kept going back to, of all people, Jane Fonda. And I feel like Jane is someone whose entire career up to this day is peppered with stuff that is a billion times more incendiary than anything Katherine Heigl ever said. But every time Jane Fonda does it, she just ends up back with a role where you're like, oh yeah, I'm that talented, so I can say whatever the fuck I want. And I'm looking at this list of all the projects that Catherine's worked on since the, you know, Grey's Gate, if we're going to call it that. And it's been, you know, there's been rom-coms and there's been State of Affairs and all this other shit, but she just needs something bigger. So I don't know what role the mom plays, but I can tell you in the past 14 years, she's done a terrible job of keeping her daughter's career afloat. So without even knowing that, I'm just going to say, fire the mom and give Katherine Heigl Madea, or give her Mama Rose on Broadway, or just give her something. Because every time Jane Fonda gets in trouble, they're like, oh yeah, well, here's another Oscar nomination. Oh, you think I hate half the country? Here's On Golden Pond. Here's Grace and Frankie, a fifth act production that she's brilliant in. Here's a cameo on The Newsroom on HBO. It's like, you people who want to hate Jane Fonda, they probably still hate her, but they at least say that she's talented when they watch what she does. And I don't think that Katherine Heigl's been given the chance to do it. So she shouldn't be apologizing anymore. She needs someone to take a chance on her. She just needs to get rid of her mother and have some ballsy producer say, I'm going to give you a one-woman show on Broadway. Even if no one goes, as long as the reviews are really good, she can just move on to something else. She should just start playing like iconic female roles.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is easier said than done. But that's my pitch. I don't know why I'm sticking with Madea. I do mean, of course, the Greek tragedy, not the.
I was. That's what I thought you meant. Tyler Perry at first.
Yeah, no.
Like, wait,
yeah.
She should play Madea.
No, yeah. If she played that Madea, that would be problematic. Like that's another way to go is taking over that role.
That would not help her career at all.
And I just think of Mama Rose, or maybe Hello Dolly, or just something. Just give me the most
juicy,
dramatic thing you could do, and just be Lady Macbeth. There's something that's attainable. Pair her up with TR as Macbeth. Pair her up with Isaiah Washington as Macbeth, and put them
the headlines. The headlines. Oh, that would be so juicy. You know, can I piggyback off both of you? Because I think these are both beautiful ideas, and I would like to see them in tandem. Like, I would like to see both of those applied along with I know I mentioned a 27 Dresses sequel, but to me that is like also the last piece of that puzzle, and I think her doing a sequel to that would be much stronger actually than what I said earlier about doing the Knocked Up sequel, because I don't think that movie comes with all of the drama, and so she wouldn't necessarily have to like address all that. She could be confident and live in her truth, especially during the press cycle, but then it would remind audiences of what they loved about 27 Dresses. And I think the key to that is like, you have to make, I think they need to like just focus on making that a good fucking movie. And so although they didn't like my idea for writing that movie, they really should have hired me, but that's a tale for another time. They just need to get a good ass script and like really focus it on making a good ass 27 Dresses. The first movie is not like technically a great movie. Again, it came out in January, but I think, so I don't think there would be as much pressure to like make some like amazing work of art, no matter what they do, as long as they put some care and effort into it, it'll be probably better than the first one, because it's just not technically the best movie ever. It's just, we love it. So I would go with 27 Dresses and do it really, really well and remind audiences that we love her and she's got that romantic comedy thing that we love, and romantic comedies are kind of back now. Anyone But You just did really, really well. And I think they're going to start making some more of them. So hopefully that'd be a good opportunity to do a throwback Katherine Heigl rom-com, but they really have to make it good. It can't just be a shitty script. Like it has to be good for her to come back to work.
I am not trying to cop out or forfeit or anything, but I genuinely feel, Christopher, tell me if you agree with this, anything other than a declaration of a three-way tie this week would seem homophobic to me. That's what I'm saying. Because sometimes they come on and we're just like, holy shit, that's light years better than what we thought. Sometimes a guest pitches, like we did with poor Aaron Bagwell, who I love, and we just say, no, thank you. Please choose between ours. But I feel like Danny's idea is the third course to a perfect Katherine Heigl meal here.
All three of those things together, I think, would make that career. We solved her career issues.
This is our first three-way tie in the history of fixing famous people. It's never this is an unprecedented
Dominic,
moment.
In an unprecedented move, we are going to do a three-way tie for the first time in the history of this podcast.
For Katherine Heigl, man. Katherine Heigl's the one that fosters this fucking monumental achievement. I don't get it. Not what I was expecting when I put this mic shield on today. Not
just
gotta at
all. Ride the wave of life, much like the cast of Grey's Anatomy did. Sometimes you'll get waves.
For real though, like even though she's not done anything real and like that we like have loved in the last 10 years, like she still is like an A-list celebrity. Like even though she's hated, like if you see her on a red carpet, like it's a big deal.
And I'd also like to say that aside from Grey's Anatomy, those early seasons, most of what she's done, even the best of it, is still pretty bad. Like I of course love her, and so 27 Dresses I love, but it's not technically it's bad. Like I don't think anything she's done is like I don't think anything she's done is as good as like My Best Friend's Wedding or When Harry Met Sally or something like that. Like she's still like a tier below any of those. But here I am I will fight to the death about a 27.
Because you are fighting for her. You're still enchanted with her promise. Because were it not for her remarks, she would have been on the Julia, Sandra, Meg Ryan. She would have been there. She would have been there for the past 14 years if all this stuff didn't happen. If she didn't.
She should have been doing.
If she wasn't a woman with an opinion.
She should have be. She should be in Shotgun Wedding. Like she should be the J-Lo role and something like that, or Ticket to Paradise, or, you know, there are some of these newer rom-coms that have the older an older demographic, and so I just need Catherine to get one of those.
Well, she's going to. Well, first, she's going to get. It's going to be 28 Dresses, which is going to come out the same week that her memoir comes out, and when she opens on Broadway. As Reno Sweeney probably in Anything Goes. That's what I'm just going to throw out there right now.
Before you cut me off, is Knocked Up, would you consider Knocked Up like an all-time great comedy?
No.
I wouldn't personally, but I would consider it like, it's definitely like a template for a certain kind. Like it has a place in history and like the Apatow canon. Like,
but it's not like super bad. Like, do you know what I mean? Like super bad, I think is like something that people quote. Like people don't quote Knocked Up. Like people don't.
No. I also have to tell you, I confuse Knocked Up and 40-Year-Old Version routinely, though I know they're different movies, different years, but they're sort of the same energy to me. And I think of them as the same movie.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah. I don't even know. I can't even really understand what the cultural footprint is of Knocked Up. Like maybe because it's more of a straight movie and so I'm just not sure. But I do straight people, that's what I'm trying to think. Do straight people really like that movie? Or
I don't think so. I don't think it gets like the praise that other ones in the same realm get. But all this, we could talk about this all day.
What's Danny the movie Pellegrino? Where the security guard doesn't let Leslie Mann and someone else into the club because they're too fucking old? Do you know that movie where he's like, I want to let you in here, but you're just too fucking
That's knocked
old.
Up. That's knocked
it
up.
It is knocked up?
Knocked up?
I think. I get mixed up between This Is 40 and Knocked Up. Like
I might have even meant that, actually.
Yeah, maybe it might have been that.
I might have meant all that. They all just sort of bleed together because they're.
Oh, brother. Okay. So I'm like,
I know that 40-Year-Old Version is the Kelly Clarkson chest waxing one. Yes, that I'm 100% sure about.
I remember liking them all. Like I love all those movies. And I'm sure if I were to see it, I don't have cable anymore. Like I just stream things. But if I had cable and was flipping through, I would stop. Or if I'm in a hotel room and I see one of those, like I'll stop and put it on. But I just don't know if they have that kind of cultural footprint. I used to think Knocked Up would, but I don't know. I feel like you're right. It doesn't really.
I feel like that 40-Year-Old Virgin and what's the other one? What's the third one that we were just talking about? This Is 40. Is that one? Is that the name of a film?
Yeah. This Is 40.
Those are all sort of the same movie to me, really. Because they all came out around the same time-ish. I don't know.
And okay, I do Chris, still do want This Is 50 because I love Leslie Mann. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Ditto.
Danny Pellegrino, thank you so much for being with us. Tell everyone, tell the 1.5 listeners that don't know who you are that listen to this podcast where they can listen to Everything Iconic.
Oh, thank you. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, my podcast is called Everything Iconic. And I have two books out that if you're interested, they're essay collections. And I know Katherine Heigl's mentioned throughout one or both of them, at least at some point. I'm certain of it. I just don't know where or when exactly. But I know Katherine's name drop because there's lots of pop culture references and stuff in those books. But check them out.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. Such a dream. I can't wait for part two where we're going to just, Dominic's going to come
talk
in after
Grey's
having
Anatomy.
Watched.
You're going to hate my level of expertise of Grey's Anatomy when we come back here. You're going to hang up and I'm going to keep talking about it. And I'll be like, in episode 404,
Before we do that, I'll go back and catch the seasons I gave up on. So I'll have to watch maybe two seasons.
Dominic, where can people find you?
On social media at Dominic Pupa, or my website's dominterry.com, or just go to the Fixing Famous People Insta page and you can squirrel your way to me from there. And Christopher, where can the people find you?
You can find me at the Krista Rosa. You can find the show at Fixing Famous People, and you can find the Patreon at patreon.com/fixingfamouspeople. I wish you both well. And as always, where's Shelly? Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.